Austerity continues to bite the country, and we tighten our collective belts. The last thing on most people's minds is the thought of paying through the nose for an expensive slap-up meal. However, a Cardiff chef may have come up with a novel idea. He's Derry Reid, also known as the Ethical Chef, and he's here to explain, among other things, supper clubs. I've never heard of supper clubs before. What happens at a supper club?
Okay, so supper clubs, it was originated basically in London. They've got these underground restaurants where you'd get a home cook saying, inviting their friends round for dinner and then charging them a minimal fee. And this was because you can really choose the ingredients. You know exactly what's gone into your food when you're home cooking, you've got your friends round. So what the supper club is trying to promote locally grown ingredients and home cooking. So I go into the kitchen where I work and I produce a dinner, and then I get people coming in and just trying out my food. And I source all my ingredients from Cardiff Riverside Market, from producers like Blind Camel Farm, Pencoy Growers, Teemar Organic Farm, and they're just brilliant. And it makes you connect more with the seasons.
I hate to ask you the tight Westphalian question, but what's the difference between having supper at your supper club and having supper in a restaurant?
Okay, well, it's totally informal. When you come into my supper club, you're not kind of waited on hand and foot like you would do in a restaurant. That's the last thing you should expect when you come in there. It's like walking into someone's house, into someone's lounge. You've got your table, you've got a waiter that comes up to you and introduces themselves and what we're doing. And we're just trying to make things a little bit different. So you don't have to pay, as you were saying, through the nose, about kind of £30-40 for a good home-cooked, locally sourced dinner.
What about the cost? So the cost difference is appreciable. We're talking about maybe a half or a third of what you might pay in a restaurant.
Exactly. We don't have the huge overheads as you do in a restaurant. You're not paying massive business rates and not having to pay for a building to maintain that and huge staffing costs. It's just me and one other person cooking the food from scratch and then serving it up.
And presumably the menu is a little bit restricted because you're not offering the sort of huge list of choices that you might get in a restaurant.
There is no choice. It's a set menu and you get what is given to you, like you would if you went round to a friend's house and they cooked you dinner.
What do other restaurateurs make of this? I mean, presumably someone like you, a talented chefy type, is competition.
I wouldn't class myself as a chefy type. I'm more concerned about the environment and industrialised food industries and things. And what I want to try and do is show people that it is really easy to cook things from scratch with ingredients that are on our doorsteps. So I'm not out there kind of cooking fancy meals to try and compete with these big restaurants. I'm offering something a step back from that, and just using these ingredients for their pure flavour rather than altering them left, right and centre and making things really fancy.
And it's an interesting thing about eating out now, isn't it? That if you go to, I don't know, go to the supermarket this afternoon with your trolley, you can toddle around filling up your basket or your trolley, and you can look at the ingredients on the side of what you'll buy. You can see where it's made, what's in it. When you go out to eat, whether or not you're going to the pub or a chain or whatever, you don't really have the same kind of detail in terms of what you're buying and more to the point, what you're eating.
You don't, and a lot of the time, they won't even know. So if you ask any of the staff in a restaurant, a lot of the time, if it is a chain, they won't know where the ingredients are sourced from, and they might not feel that that's important, whereas I feel that is hugely important. If I'm going out and I want a good, wholesome meal, I'd like to know where it's from, and that is what I'm offering. If you want to know where it's from, come and speak to me. I can tell you exactly where it's from.
And this has grown on Twitter, basically, hasn't it? If it wasn't for Twitter, you wouldn't be able to market this and get your message out.
Twitter has been a huge business tool for me. I started tweeting when I started the business, and I've got a huge following. I get about 100 new followers every month. And from just one tweet of saying, I'm thinking of setting up a supper club, I got a huge response from all the people that support me in what I'm doing. And it was fully booked last week. It's fully booked this week. And next week's already starting to fill up. And that's incredible for small startups like myself.
I mean, presumably there were lots of people who like going out occasionally for a meal with your other half or with your family. I mean, you are perhaps going to be thrown together with lots of people who you don't know, and that's perhaps part of the charm or not.
I am, but a lot of my customers are very understanding of this situation that we are in today. The massively the massive increase of food costs with fuel prices and the meat industry, again, it's increasing there. It's much cheaper to go for vegetarian food and locally sourced foods, much shorter, much lower food miles. And it gives you a nice feeling. A lot of the customers from last week said, I felt really, really good coming and eating here tonight. And it was such a nice atmosphere. And it was just incredible. After I finished cooking, I went out and spoke to everyone. And I just had some incredible responses from people.
How did you get into cooking? When did you start?
I started when I left home and mummy wasn't there to cook for me. And I realised how little I knew and how important it is to know how to cook. Because you're on your own when you leave. When you leave from under your parents' wings, you're on your own. And if you don't know how to cook, yeah, okay, you can go into a supermarket and buy all these ready-made meals. But what if you don't want to buy these ready-made meals and you know that it's not the best thing to be buying ready-made meals? So if you don't know how to cook, you're in a little bit of a dilemma. So I suppose I started looking into how to make bread and basic dishes like lasagnas and macaroni cheese and things like this. And then I decided to train to be a chef. While I was in uni, I used to work in a restaurant, start at the bottom from washing pots. After I left university, I decided to step in on a more professional level and train to be a chef. So after that, after looking into kind of the environmental impacts of eating locally and importing food and things like that, I decided to go down a vegetarian route because my parents had brought me up as vegetarian. And I decided that I'd like to look into some of the reasons why they'd chosen to do that, because it was very different. Me growing up being vegetarian, I think I was probably the only boy or the only person in my class, maybe even school, that was vegetarian. And I stood out from the crowd a lot. I'd have my peanut butter sandwiches and an apple for lunch, whereas my mates would have ham and cheese sandwiches and Kit Kats and this and that. And I didn't understand why. But after looking into some of these, some of the food industry and things like that, I decided to go and work in a vegetarian restaurant over in Ireland called Cafe Paradiso.
No, well, not any old vegetarian restaurant. This is one of the world's best, isn't it?
It is one of the world's best, yeah. So I'll never forget the day when I sent Dennis Cotter an email saying, "Hi, Dennis, I'd like to come over and spend a week with you to learn how to... just to see how you work," because he works very, very closely with a local farmer who grows all his vegetables, and they've written a book together called Wild Garlic, Gooseberries and Me. And I read that book and I was just like, this is incredible. We've got a chef who works incredibly close with a grower, and their agreement is anything he grows, he will buy off him and then cut something up and sell it. And I was just sold by this. So I sent him an email saying, "I'd love to come and work with you." And he said, "We don't have any volunteer options at the moment, but we are looking for a full-time chef." I went over there straight away, thinking, this is going to be incredible. I can't wait. Went over there. I did a shift. It was the hardest shift I've ever done in my life. It was incredible. I thought going vegetarian would be possibly a step down. A lot of my chef colleagues said, "Well, you're never going to get another job if you go and become a vegetarian chef because no one's going to employ you." I've learned 10 times more becoming a vegetarian chef than if I was stayed doing what I was doing. It's so much more, you have to be so much more inventive being a vegetarian chef. We'd walk into the kitchen, we'd get a whole box of vegetables, and then you'd have to prepare dinner from scratch every single night. And that is very hard.
Because it's still a minority sport in a sense, isn't it? I mean, Britain is still a nation of meat eaters.
It is.
And a lot of our meat is flown in from all over the place. We're not terribly discerning about asking where it's come from. But I mean, vegetarian cooking and eating is still something of a rarity, particularly in Wales.
It is. And in Ireland, it isn't. And in Wales, it is. And in England, it isn't either. And that's what I suppose this is what I'm trying to do. The movement in Ireland is incredible. You've got heavy, heavy carnivores in Ireland that really respect Dennis's work. He cooks incredible vegetarian food. And they go to the restaurant and they come out to the chef and they're just like, "That food was incredible. I did not miss meat at all." That is the best compliment I could ever get, is from a heavy meat eater or anyone who eats meat but just has the respect that vegetarian food, it is very, very good. It can be very, very good. But it isn't good at the moment with when it's kind of put on the bottom of the list on a menu.
It's an afterthought. It's often a filler, isn't it?
And it's And it's something that...
Interestingly, I mean, socially as well, I often think, you know, people say, oh, you're not vegetarian, are you, or anything like that. Yes. They do, don't they?
Well, exactly. And it's usually kind of a hassle for a chef to think, oh, I've got to cook something vegetarian. It shouldn't be like that. It definitely shouldn't be like that. It should be something that they definitely think, and it's at the forefront of their menu.
It's an interesting time to be in your line of business, isn't it? Because, you know, Britain's in the, well, the world's in the grip of this recession. You keep on reading stories about restaurants and pubs in Wales going bang because, well, a whole variety of different factors, you know, all sorts of things. The smoking ban, pub owners will tell you, has made life very, very difficult.
Exactly.
But also people are tightening their belts and thinking, well, you know, do we really need to go out to dinner and do we really need to pay this amount of money? It's not the easiest business at any time.
It's not.
Particularly at the moment.
It's not at all, and that's what I'm hoping this supper club will be able to offer the public, is somewhere to come, and you can bring your own wine. I don't have an alcohol licence, so that is a significant saving from the word go. You could bring your own bottle of wine, saving yourself £15-20, and then for £15 you get a three-course set menu, really, really nice atmosphere. You still get the feeling of going out and you're in a restaurant kind of atmosphere. You're meeting with like-minded people. As long as you're open-minded and you can understand that, okay, maybe all the plates aren't necessarily matching, or you've got a tablecloth that might have been used in someone else's house kind of thing, or you've got, I don't know, maybe all the tables are different and the chairs are different. It's a little bit kind of niche and unique and quite a rustic experience.
And if it takes off, I mean, what are your long-term aims and ambitions? I mean, you don't want to go and open a restaurant, presumably. That would be against your religion.
I'm not entirely sure. It'd be nice to have somewhere to showcase local food. It would be really, really nice. But, of course, that's very difficult to have somewhere to do that because you have to have a huge support. So I'm hoping that with Twitter and Facebook and the Ethical Chef website that I will be building up a database of people that are interested in the work that I'm doing. Maybe that will then lead on to a cafe or a restaurant, but I'm not really sure. I'm just riding the wave at the moment and seeing where it'll take me.
And, you know, we talked about the economy and how difficult it is being a restaurateur and a pub owner and all that kind of thing. Do you think in the middle of these hard times, people really care about where their food has come from? Or is it actually the bottom line that matters most to people in these kind of circumstances?
I think that people do care. I just think they need a little bit of a helping hand. They need to... There's caring and then there's kind of looking into it and learning about it. If people are more connected with the seasons and more connected with what is available at the market, knowing how to cook something from scratch, then that's extremely important. When I first moved to Cardiff, I went to Cardiff's Riverside Community Allotment, and there they've got an amazing community of people that go there and they learn how to grow. It's absolutely amazing. It's run by a lady called Jenny Howells, and she's just magnificent. Anyone can go down there from any background and learn about growing and cooking, and it's just, that's what has got me to where I am today, I suppose. It's good exercise, it's socialising, you're being outdoors, you're more in tune with the seasons, and you appreciate simpler things in life. It's so relaxing down there.
And we must say thank you for feeding most of Radio Wales with I was going to say chocolate brownies. They're rhubarb brownies, aren't
they? Beetroot.
Beetroot.
Beetroot and chocolate brownies.
They are absolutely delicious. Don't give any more to Jason Muhammad if you see him in the corridor.
And part of the idea behind Ethical Chef as well, it's not about hiding recipes and keeping everything secret. It's about promoting how to do these things. So the brownie that you're eating right there, the recipe's put up on the Ethical Chef website because I want people to try out more things. I want people to think, oh, that tastes delicious. I'd love to know how to do that. It's simple. Good ingredients, put them together. You've got it.
Derry, we wish you every success. Thank you very much for coming in this morning. You can find out much more information at the Ethical Chef website. And our thanks this morning to Derry Reid.
Thank you, Jane.